I mean, one way to look at it is, if you were the buyer, what would you want to see? You would want to make sure that you can take over everything, whether it's like accounts of the business, the responsibilities of the owner, the current team are in place. So if you've got a team, make sure that they're going to ideally stay with the business, make sure they've got contracts in place. If you've got reliable freelancers or VAs, make sure they're still going to be available. And uncertainty there is, the more likely they are to like pay a good price or give you good terms when they buy from you.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome to superfastbusiness.com. Today's topic is exit planning. Building your business the right way to sell it. And I've brought on a special guest, Thomas Smail from feinternational.com. Welcome.
Hey, James. Thanks so much for having me on.
So we should just be clear. There's a couple of points to this, two phases, so to speak. One is when you've got your business, you'll want to start thinking about your exit planning. That's the first phase. And then the second phase will be the sale of the business itself. Now, your company actually focuses on the selling part if someone doesn't want to do it themselves. Why don't we first talk about what are the differences between selling a business yourself versus using a company to sell it? And then I think we'll spend most of our time on the exit planning phase, because that's something we're going to do regardless of who sells the business.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the way it works with a broker, so whether it's us or any broker, most are going to be reasonably similar in their approach versus selling for yourself. So, I mean, one of the main reasons you use a broker is they've got experience throughout the selling process, preparing a business to sell, presenting it to buyers, dealing with buyers. So if you work with us, we would spend some time with you up front, going over your financials, asking a bunch of questions about the business, preparing sales materials. So that's not necessarily something that you can't do yourself, but we have quite a structured way to do it. And it's really based on feedback from literally thousands of buyers over the years as to like what they want to see. So while it's standardized internally, it's built around kind of logic and what buyers have asked for. Whereas if you're doing it yourself, you don't necessarily know what buyers want to see. You might think you know, but in reality what buyers want and what you think they might be quite a lot different from there. And then obviously if you work with a broker, we've got existing buyer contacts, where if you're dealing yourself, you might have a few like friends or peers who might be interested in the business, but chances are you don't know literally thousands of buyers that are actively interested in buying a business. So the initial reach you're going to get is going to be lower. And I guess with a broker, we find that the majority of buyers we deal with take maybe a year or 2 years to make a decision on the business they want to buy. So if you're just selling one business, the odds of that particular buyer actually buying your business is quite slim. Whereas you're dealing with a broker, you might have dealt with someone who has already looked at five of our businesses before and said no. And then when your business gets listed, it's the one they want to buy. So that's another advantage.
Okay, just a quick recap there. You're dealing with someone with lots of experience and lots of data points, really, and a database of buyers, and you know what the buyers are looking for, and wherever they're at in the cycle, you always got a pool of buyers. So they're all positives. You got a couple more there?
Yeah, so once you've got through that stage, then that's like the negotiation stage, which, I mean, most business owners are perfectly capable of negotiating, but one of the reasons you should use a broker or like, I guess any third party, is it removes a lot of the emotion from the process. So obviously entrepreneurs are passionate about their business, they like their business, so when they come to selling, you can be quite emotional and kind of almost irrational in the process. Whereas the job of a broker, while they want to sell the business for you, they've got to be objective and help you make like rational decisions. So you don't want to take like a really bad offer just because you kind of get fed up with the length of the process, or you don't like a particular person, so you don't want to deal with them at all. So that like third party objectivity is important. It's not necessarily like a broker, you could do it with a friend or whoever, just as long as you're not the person, the business owner's not the one negotiating. And then from there, obviously, like getting an offer on a business, a lot of people get to the stage where independently they can get a lot of interest or get an offer. But there's a big difference between getting an offer on a business and actually getting the cash in the bank and getting it closed. So an experienced broker will be able to walk you through the offer process, making sure that the terms you accept are good and you haven't like missed any kind of like traps in an offer that quite often experienced buyers will try and put in. Walk you through the due diligence process and make sure that what the buyer's asking for is reasonable. And then all the way through to contract negotiation. So we're pretty kind of heavily involved all the way through like drafting, making sure the agreement is fair for both parties. Usually saving parties, especially the seller, quite a lot of cash on like legal fees, accounting fees. If you work with the broker, you shouldn't really need an accountant or a lawyer, except just for like reviewing contracts. And then all the way through to closing, so making sure that the transaction's safe. So once you've got the contract, using an escrow service, transferring the business properly, making sure that like you're all protected on that front. So a lot of it is experience. A lot of it's, like, I guess, objectivity throughout the process. And obviously the plus side of having someone who's already got the thousands of buyer contacts versus the probably tens of contacts you might have yourself. So that's like a reasonable summary of why people might use a broker versus trying to sell themselves.
Okay. Now, I imagine there's plenty of different brokers out there. What are some of the things that you see other brokers doing that might make it not ideal to sell through a broker?
So the brokerage industry, like many industries, is extremely competitive. So you get a lot of brokers out there, especially those who are trying to get business in, who upfront might set very unrealistic expectations with a seller. So they might attract you in with really high valuation, really low fees, or like a really like short expectation period to actually sell the business. So they might have a business that's worth $500,000, they might value at $1 million, knowing if you go speak to another broker who values it at $500,000, you're quite likely to go with them.
So it's like the old real estate listing trick.
Yeah, exactly. It's not unique to brokerage, but it is something that you see quite often. The other one is like timing. So quite often, selling a good business, while there's lots of buyers out there who are interested, they don't sell overnight, nor should it sell overnight. If your business is selling like one day with like little preparation, anything like that, then there's probably something wrong with like the process, and you want to make sure that you're getting the best possible deal. So sometimes like brokers will attract you in with like a really short time frame, and they'll say, oh yeah, we'll sell the business in 2 days. In reality, that get you in a situation where you accept like a bad offer, or you accept an offer that's like not really structured in a particularly good way.
Does the broker only get paid if the website is sold or the business is sold?
Yeah.
So they're very keen to sell the seller on selling.
Yeah. So, I guess there are two broker models. Part of the reason I entered the industry in the first place, like 5 years ago, was that the traditional business broker model is attract a lot of sellers, and then over the course of a year, you might sell 10 to 20% of the businesses you list, because their approach is kind of list a lot and occasionally the odd business will sell, regardless of like your advice or the expectations. And they don't really mind because they're still getting paid on those couple. They're not getting paid on the rest, but that's just, I guess, cost of doing business for them. Whereas our approach has always been, if we take it on, put like maximum focus, give the right advice up front. So it might mean we lose some business to other brokers just by being honest up front. But our success rate for a sale is 93% versus the 10 or 20% you might get more traditionally. So, but like you say, obviously the broker's incentivized to get the sale done, but some will kind of put a lot less work in and do a lot of deals at once. Whereas our approach is more put a lot of time into a deal and sell almost everything.
And what sort of fee structure is someone going to be looking for when they sell their business? And a side question to that is, what is the typical sort of business that is like the sweet spot for you?
Yeah, so fee-wise, it will depend, but the majority of brokers, if you've got a small business, say $50,000 business, you'd expect to pay 15%. If you've got a bigger business, say $500,000, then you'd expect to pay 10%, and anywhere in between 10 and 15%, depending on the size of the business. If it's much larger, like in the multi-million-dollar range, then that fee might come down to 9%, 8%, 7%, 6% as it goes up. In terms of for us, our sweet spot, we're quite versatile in the range we deal with. We sell sites anywhere from $20,000 to $30,000 up to $2 or $3 million. The majority of our deals are in the 50,000 to 500,000 range. We do a lot of volume at that level. We say we do with online businesses. So anything that is online based, chances are we sold something similar before. We do a lot of e-commerce businesses. We do a lot of AdSense, Amazon, affiliate type content sites. We do a lot of SaaS businesses. We really do a real range. But I mean, the sweet spot for us is more on size rather than business model. We've got so many buyers and we spent so much like time and resource investing in defining buyers that as long as it's online based, chances are we've got a buyer. It's really just making sure it's at the right size.
And for the different categories of sites you've mentioned, whether it's e-commerce or affiliate AdSense sites or SaaS, or I imagine you also do services from time to time.
Yep.
Are there very different sale valuation methods? Is it usually some kind of a multiple of profit?
Yeah, so we use a multiple of, well, we use what we call SDE, which is seller discretionary earnings, which is very similar to net profit, except you do what we call it adding back any discretionary costs. So, for example, owner salary. Anything that the owner's taken out of the business that's not relevant to running the business gets added back. So it's effectively the net profit, and then you take out any costs that the owners included, which are really themselves. Because obviously, from a tax perspective, most businesses like to run as close to zero as possible. Whereas when you're selling your business, you want to make that net number as high as possible.
If you had to replace the owner, though, you guess you'd have to allow a commercial salary for that role.
Yes, you take it into account. We don't generally take it into account as a cost in the P&L, but we take it into account with a slightly lower valuation. So multiple-wise, let's say you've got a business that's nets $100,000 a year and you've got an owner who works 40 hours a week, and then you've got the same business making $100,000 but the owner works 5 hours a week, then we wouldn't necessarily adjust that number, but we would adjust the multiple the business is worth. So the business with 5 hours a week is going to be worth more than 40 hours a week in that situation.
How much would both of those businesses be worth, roughly?
Yeah, so I mean, it varies. And like you mentioned, like the different types of businesses are going to attract slightly different multiples. Generally speaking, the lower end of the threshold is like one-time service businesses, especially if they're quite owner-reliant. So you can see them going anywhere from 1 to 2.5 times annual net, more towards the one if it's like a full-time job and it's quite specialized. Whereas if you're like completely outsourced, you've got like recurring clients, then you might expect more like 2.5. SaaS businesses, anything recurring tends to be the highest multiples we see. So we can go anywhere up to 4 to 5 times the annual net for a small business at that level, especially if it's growing and you're just looking at the last 12 months. But in general, I think our average multiple in the last 12 months is about 2.7 times. So a fair estimate, if you don't know any different, like variable-wise, would be 2 to 3 times. The majority of businesses will fall somewhere in that range.
Excellent. That's very comprehensive, especially on the selling part, Thomas. Now I'm just going to switch into the exit planning phase. I think that's something that would be really interesting for someone thinking about selling their business, because it would prepare them well to lead up to dealing with a broker. And let's start first with, why would we even want to sell our business? What are some of the main reasons that you see people want to sell? And is it important to frame this with the buyer?
Yeah, so I think firstly, like with exit planning, a lot of people think they should only be exit planning if they're actually planning on selling their business. But I think it's important, regardless of whether or not you think about doing it at the moment, to do it anyway and be something in the back of your mind. In terms of reasons people sell, so it's definitely something that buyers look at, because from a buyer perspective, quite often people sell businesses when they're kind of been like semi-abandoned. The owner might have moved on to new things and they want to figure out if they've moved on to new things because that business is dying, or if they legitimately have other things going on. So that's probably the number one reason we get. It's usually entrepreneurs or serial entrepreneurs who have multiple ventures and they just want to focus their time, energy and cash on one business, and the business they're selling might no longer be core for whatever reason. Sometimes, especially on the lower end of the market, sometimes we're dealing with sellers who might have just got offered a new job, or they've just relocated, they've just been offered a partnership in a business, their business has just got funding, so they want to move on to new things, and for whatever reason they just no longer have the time to run the business. I guess less common for us, but probably more more common with traditional business brokers is retirement. You don't find there are that many online business owners who are nearing retirement. But I mean, that is something that comes up. Sometimes people just want to free up some space. We deal with a few people who, I guess, buy and sell businesses quite regularly, and that is their business. So whether you want to call it business flipping, website flipping. So we do deal with some people like that who build businesses up purely for the intention of selling them after, say, 1-2 years, or they might have bought it from somewhere else and then they look to sell it. So that would probably be the main reasons people look to sell. And it's definitely something buyers look at. They want to make sure that the seller's leaving the business for the right reasons rather than the business falling apart, which is another reason that people sell. The business is on a decline. They don't know how to fix it.
Like when people trade in a car when the engine's about to fail.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any statistics on how many businesses you sell, how they're performing like a year or two after the sale? Is there any sort of metrics tracked in that regard?
Yes, we do tend to follow up with people. What you find is that sometimes people buy a business with all the intention of like doing a lot of work to it and then don't. The majority of businesses will remain, I guess, if you look to, say, 80% of businesses we sell, they're going to be plus or minus 20% after a year. We deal with some that are like significantly larger. So it's not uncommon to see a business that's bought, they've actually followed through the plan, especially if a business is like particularly solid when they've bought it and the owner is selling it because they've been focusing elsewhere and someone buys it and does focus. Do you see businesses that maybe go 5-10 times bigger in a year? You occasionally get businesses that kind of struggle and drop a little bit. That's usually if the owner's not really put the work in that they should, which tends to be quite a big issue in general, is that people take on businesses and they don't spend enough time figuring out whether or not they're actually going to be able to run the business. And then they just kind of neglect it and it kind of gradually declines. Because regardless of what someone tells you, every single business is going to need at least some attention. We do track metrics on like outright scams, so how often a site goes through that's like turns out to be complete fraud. And I think out of 350 deals, I think I'm aware of one ever that's not done as well as it should have done. So generally speaking, dealing with like a decent broker, you're not going to have any issues on that front, especially if you work through like a structured due diligence process, which we do now.
Well, I think you dropped a good hint too about following the plan. I think when it comes to exit planning, I'm sure one of the things that you will need to do is outline what the next steps for the business might be to a potential buyer. Let's talk about preparing the business for sale. We've really comprehensively covered why you might do it. We've had a look at what sort of success or failure rates are happening for people who take on the new business. Now got to talk about what can we do with our business. And I, by the way, I really like the idea of planning from the beginning. I've created an entire course around a selling checklist that I'm working on at the moment to publish at some point. And I think that is because in a world where there's a lot of people focusing on making themselves famous and personal brands, I think there's probably a lot more merit in building something that's saleable, stepping away from that personal brand a little bit if you possibly can. So I like the whole concept of it. What sort of things are we going to have to consider from the beginning and right up to when we want to sell that are going to make this business saleable? And you already mentioned recurring income was one of them.
Yeah, recurring income definitely helps. From a buyer perspective, the more recurring income there is, the more certainty there is. Whereas if you're relying on like one-time sales, theoretically whatever source of sales you have could dry up and then that business is making zero. Whereas the recurring business, even if you sell nothing ever again, you're still going to have some return.
A residual income.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things you mentioned as you were explaining was that there's a lot of emphasis on like personal brand, people like building themselves up. So that's probably the most important thing to consider is how replaceable are you in the business. There's nothing wrong with, I mean, all entrepreneurs have to put in the work at the start of the business or might even work full-time in their business for quite a long time. But when it comes to selling from a buyer perspective, they want to make sure that you're replaceable. So the more replaceable you are in your business, the more likely someone is to A, want to buy it, and B, buy it for good terms. So again, is the kind of, are you working 40 hours a week or are you working 5 hours a week? And if you manage to get yourself to 5 hours a week, your business is going to be worth more.
Do you ever get people trying to sell a business where it's built on their personal domain?
I'm trying to think if we've done, I think we've done one. And in that case, they'd kind of had like a cartoon persona on the website. So I always say to people, like my number one advice, people never build a website on a personal domain.
Yeah, I say that a lot. Quite a few people in my own community come through the blogging community, and those guys are crazy about building on their own name. It's maybe it's an ego thing, or it's a quick win. It's pretty easy to brand yourself because you know there's no other version of you. But it's not something that you're going to be talking to a website sale broker about to sell for multiples at some point in the future, is it?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with building a personal blog or a personal brand, but you should use that to leverage other standalone brands. So you're never going
to
sell.
Yeah, to power up your brand, like Richard Branson does for Virgin.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Elon Musk does for Tesla.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having a personal brand, but you need to realize if you want to sell the business, then keeping it separate is important.
Separate.
You can't put your like face on the About Us page. But the business shouldn't be about you. Ideally, shouldn't have your name in it or anything like that. Try and avoid like your picture. And if you're building like a product or something like that in a niche that you're not personally involved in, then maybe come out with like a pseudonym, like using a picture that's not you, maybe even using a cartoon picture or something along those lines. So yeah, replaceability is very important from a buyer perspective. The easier it is for a business to take over, the more desirable it is. And that's the number one thing you need to think about. You don't necessarily need to think about it from day one, except when it comes to things like choosing your domain. But close to a sale, you need to start being. I was talking to a potential seller earlier on the phone, and I was telling him that it's kind of the difference between running a business for like as a hobby and something you really enjoy, and being really quite ruthless with what's 100% necessary to run the business. So he was spending 35 hours a week on a business, and when he actually went through what he was doing in those 35 hours, the vast majority of it was not actually relevant to running it. It was things like updating the Twitter.
I think you described most of the workforce.
Yeah, exactly. So it's fine if you have a job or when you're just kind of working and not really planning on selling the business. But if you are planning on selling, it's one of those things that's really going to affect your valuation if you are really active within the business. So it's definitely something to consider. I mean, other like general best practices, making sure you've got very clean financials is important. I mean, it's almost going to be impossible to sell a business if you have no idea what you're making, if it's mixed up with other businesses you might have, if you can't verify anything. So make sure you're keeping track of invoices, payments you've made to people, income you've got coming in. Use some sort of accounting software, whether you want to use like QuickBooks, FreshBooks, even an accountant or a bookkeeper.
Zero.
So anything like that, ideally try and keep clean accounts. It's going to be a lot easier for you to sell your business, for a broker to help you sell your business, or a buyer to take over the business if it's very clear to them what you're making and what you're spending. So it sounds quite obvious, but you'd be surprised how many people come in the door and they literally have no idea what they're making.
From a technical perspective, how do you do things like switch over billing for a recurring business when someone buys it? Do they have to buy the account that's attached to it, or can they resubscribe people to new accounts?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. So generally speaking, with any sort of recurring income business, you would need to take over the account. So I would usually advise people not to have PayPal accounts so they can avoid it with recurring income. And if you do have a business account, which can usually be transferred, not necessarily cross-country, so if you're in Australia and the buyer's in the US, it can be quite difficult, but it's doable. Things like Stripe is probably one of the better ones for transferring. It's usually just a case of like going in there, changing your kind of personal details. Networks like ClickBank are really good. You put up some ClickBank, you can easily go in there and change names. So generally speaking, I'm not aware of many ways that you can transfer subscriptions across. So you've always got to take over the account. And that's always something we're quite upfront with people on with recurring subscription businesses. And it's something that you definitely need to consider, because if it can't be transferred, it's not necessarily impossible to sell, but it certainly makes it more difficult. And the kind of terms or post-sale obligations you might have would be quite a lot different from the kind of like switch out the account, here you go, it's your business, versus the...
It might be to remit the funds each month until they've migrated the billing.
We've done deals like that.
It's doable, but tricky. And I imagine it's way easier with things like email databases. You can export a CSV file, et cetera. So, yeah, the payment's one that came to mind.
Yeah, recurring.
Are there any other major obstacles like that?
Recurring payments, that's definitely a big one that comes up. I can't really think of any that come up too often. Beyond that, generally speaking, especially online, most things are quite transferable. As long as you're... I mean, another thing is to make sure that if you've got other businesses, I mean, lots of people have multiple websites. They might be on like the same hosting account, which is not necessarily a problem, but just make sure you can separate them out without any issues. If you are, let's say you are self-employed and you're taking payments through your website and then those are getting sent to your bank account, that's fine, but just be aware, like when you're dealing with a buyer, they're going to want to look at your bank statement. So if you've got personal payments going through that you don't want a buyer to see, then consider getting like a separate bank account so you keep it all separated out.
So in other words, the earlier you partition your businesses out and make them completely separate modules if possible.
Yeah, as soon as it's practical. You don't necessarily have to do absolutely everything. There's nothing wrong with, say, having 5 sites on the same server, but just be aware when you do sell, the buyer's going to want to take over. The more seamless it is for the buyer, the easier it's going to be for you in the sale process, the more you're going to get for the business and the better the terms are going to be. Because like you say, you don't want to be the guy who's remitting payments for the next 2 years because you can't transfer your PayPal account, whatever.
Yeah. No, I mean, I completely relate to it. I have a predominantly subscription business and if one day I would like to sell it. So I'm setting it up on its own website and it's going to get its own new billing system and it'll just be a gradual migration of moving people across to a new payment method. But once it's done, it's able to be separated off from the main business. But it does take planning. So what other things should we be taking into account? So far we've covered that we're going to have clean financials. That's a really important one. We should consider all the different accounts, whether it's payments, hosting, email systems, that they could be separated if possible. Do we talk about a book of sale or anything like that, the selling documents, or is that stuff you cover when you're in the brokering section?
Yeah, so that's something we would cover. So we usually go in quite a lot of detail on financials and then on questions we usually ask, depending on the business. 80 to 120 questions. And then we put through we call it a prospectus. Some people might call it a memorandum. That's usually 25, 30 pages on the business. So generally, if you're going to work with a broker, you don't need to work.
Are these ones, you're just showing these to qualified buyers? Do you have a filtering process for who gets to see the prospectus?
Yeah, so the way it works with us, if you want to request information on a business we're selling, you've got to sign a non-disclosure agreement and also speak to one of our team just so we can kind of qualify you. So say, hey, I'm interested in, if you say you're interested in buying a business for $50,000 and you want an e-commerce business, and then you request information on a $1 million SaaS business, then we might ask you a little bit more about why you're interested in that particular business. But yeah, you generally have to sign a NDA, and that's without fail, and maybe some like further qualifying questions. And we keep quite a lot of data on buyers to make sure that you don't have the same guy who's requested on like 30 businesses, but never actually made an offer or asked any further questions. So that's like really important for us.
I imagine a big part of that is because in that prospectus will be some sensitive details about where the revenue is generated and where the opportunities lie to grow the business even more. Are people buying based on what they see, or is there some element of hope or, you know, potential improvement that people are valuing as well? Where do you sit with that one?
Yeah, so it does really depend on the situation. You get some buyers who just want to buy as a kind of investment. They just want to keep the business where it is, and they're quite happy doing that. Some buyers buy because the seller or the brokers explain the business in a particularly good way, and there are some growth points that have been outlined by the seller or the broker that they can follow and build up. Some will buy because they already have experience or contacts or business in that niche, and they know that they can build up the business based on what they already have. So that's something that some will look at. But there is a real variety. I would say it's probably 50-50 across buyers who are quite happy just keeping the business where it is. It might be their first purchase and really they just want like an income replacement, or they just want to kind of prove out the whole buying an online or running an online or running any business model. And then you get the buyers who are kind of looking to really expand and grow our business.
When it comes to funding, do you have situations where someone would like to buy a $100,000 business, but they don't have $100,000 available to them? Are there ways that people can get financed?
Yeah, so with financing, generally speaking, below $100,000, it's very rare to see any deals financed. The vast majority of deals we do that level of cash. It's not necessarily that it's impossible to get financing. It's more the fact there are so many cash buyers that if you are not in a cash position, then you're going to find it difficult to compete with those that are. As you get higher into the six-figure range, it's very common to see financing. Almost every deal in the six-figure range will have some financing. Usually, the amount of cash down you expect to put will depend on the business and I guess what other buyers are out there, but usually 60 to 80% cash down. And then the majority of internet businesses we deal with are seller financed. So there might be,
you
might buy a business for, say, $200,000 and you put $150,000 cash and then you agree to pay the next $50,000 over 12 months in monthly installments.
And will it be conditional? Would we consider it an earnout or a performance-based payout, or is it just implied that it has to happen?
Yeah, so it varies. We do sometimes do earnouts. Generally speaking, if a buyer wants an earnout, they're going to have to prove why they should get an earnout. So I want an earnout on this business. Here's all the things I'm going to do to it. It's not going to drop. Other situations where you might get an earnout or performance base is when the business is particularly reliant on an owner and they want to make sure that the owner is incentivized to hand the business over properly, introduce them to all the key suppliers, key contacts, key staff. So we try and avoid performance related from a seller perspective as much as possible, but some businesses unavoidable. And then there are various fixed structures. So paying out a certain amount over a certain period of time, after a certain amount of time, sometimes transactions will have milestones. So you might pay $150,000 up front and then $50,000 gets released after 3 months of training.
Yep.
So it can really vary. We do various structures, get quite creative. But yeah, generally speaking, at a buyer in the six-figure range, you wouldn't expect to pay cash that often. Cash deals do happen. If you're a cash buyer, then you're going to be at an advantage. But we very rarely see, it's not like you can buy a business for like 10% cash down. There are ways to get external funding, but it is quite rare. And it's a very competitive industry with other buyers.
I found that people just lack the knowledge to be able to value online businesses. It's certainly different to bricks and mortar when it comes to opinions and how much a business is worth, from my experience with it. And I imagine a lot of the questions you ask and the documents you prepare go a long way to creating that architecture to give someone a basis for value.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there are some, we've begun to deal with some external funding partners who will lend against online businesses, but the majority of deals we do are seller financed and cash.
So let's just see, we'll narrow down here and certainly guide me as to what I should be asking you when it comes to exit planning. We've talked about clean financials. We've talked about partitioning out accounts. What other things are going to be important? And we've also talked about how replaceable you are. So we want to increase the works without me factor of the business. What other things can we do before we head over to the broker and say, right, I've got my business, I'm ready to sell?
Probably one of the other most important things to do is consider the actual timing of the sale. It's a quite a common scenario we deal with where someone's business is doing really well. They know they may have other commitments for other things that are going to come up, but they think, oh, I'll just leave the business another 6 months. And then by the time they get to us, the business has been declining for the last 6 months because they've not been paying enough attention to it, versus knowing that your other commitment is going to come up, knowing that you're going to be away or you're starting a new job or whatever, and selling at the right time. So making sure that while the business is kind of still growing at its peak or when it's on a decline, or the seller business on a decline.
Right. So just keeping up the effort, even if you've lost the motivation, you just got to keep up the effort on the way through to the end of the sale.
Yeah, exactly. Because a business on the decline is not necessarily unsellable, but it's going to be worth significantly less than the business that's kind of still growing quite steadily. I mean, other than that, we've covered the main things. I mean, ultimately, most businesses are sellable. There's always going to be someone that wants to buy a business as long as it's profitable. It's just making sure. I mean, one way to look at it is, if you were the buyer, what would you want to see? You would want to make sure that you can take over everything, whether it's like accounts of the business, the responsibilities of the owner, the current team are in place. So if you've got a team, make sure that they're going to ideally stay with the business. Make sure they've got contracts in place. If you've got reliable freelancers or VAs.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
Make sure they're still going to be available. And uncertainty is, the more likely they are to like pay a good price or give you good terms when they buy from you.
And I suppose other things you can do are to list all the tools you use in the business, where you get your customers from, what your customer profiles are, what you... I guess sometimes we have to identify potential risks to the business. Is that kind of like the job interview question? You know, what's your negative or what's your downside? And you have to give a creative answer to that?
Yeah, you do. You might do, like, I guess you call it a SWOT analysis or something similar to that. I think generally speaking, in the sales packet you prepare, it's going to be quite positive. But we always encourage sellers to be honest if there's particular challenges that they have. Sometimes we deal with owners who might be particularly technical, but then they don't really have the marketing knowledge to grow their business. So from a buyer perspective, it's not necessarily anything wrong with the business. But if they're a buyer and they have particular marketing skills that the seller's not, that they can come in. And obviously there's a difference between, I guess, like a threat to the business and like actively misrepresenting something. So if there is a problem in the business and you know about it, whether it's one of your suppliers has just stopped supplying or someone's going to change prices, one of the team's going to leave, then that's the kind of thing you really should be upfront about. But there are a lot of like unknowns you can't necessarily protect against or know everything. It's just important to be honest, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's very comprehensive, Thomas. So I think you've given us some really good information over this call. And so we're going to close up for just a quick recap. So I've been speaking to Thomas Smail from feinternational.com, and we've been in particular talking about selling your business, your online business, and why you might consider a broker over trying to do it yourself. And some of the main reasons are you get access to a whole load of experience, and you also get a list of buyers who might be interested in your business. And then you've also got the things that you can do in preparation. And you can start today, even if you're not ready to sell. If you want to sell down the track, some of the obvious things to avoid are registering a business on your own domain name, making sure that you try and build in recurring elements, have clean financials, have the business working without you as much as possible, get the team in there to do the stuff, document stuff, list down everything you're doing, tie down your contractors with agreements, and put in that effort all the way up to the sale. Don't ease up too early because you might cost yourself. If you're looking to buy a business, then I'm sure Thomas can help you there as well. Do you have any material or checklists or information that might be useful for someone in this phase, Thomas, over at your website?
Yeah, so if you come over to the website and visit the blog, we've got, if you're looking to buy a business or you're interested in what buyers might be interested in, we've got a couple of ebooks for buyers. We've also got an ebook coming out soon on exit planning. So basically everything we've discussed, we'll go in a little bit more detail. But on the blog, if you read it, we've got various posts for buyers, sellers.
And that's over at feinternational.com.
Yeah. And then if you go there, just navigate to the blog, read around. Yeah, we've got plenty of ways. We publish a weekly blog post or a weekly newsletter. Or you can just ask anyone in the team and they'll be more than happy to like point you in the right direction.
Well, that's really good. This is a nice complimentary episode. We did one just a month or so back, which was selling your business, and we went through a case study of a private sale. So it's really good to get the brokerage angle on this. I appreciate your time, Thomas, and you have been very generous with the information you've shared. So thanks for coming along.
Yeah, thanks so much, James. Hope it was helpful.
Discover how to build your business super fast. Check out superfastbusiness.com.